What happened to the country music? Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, you didn't know this is Kenny Chesney covering Enter Sandman. You didn't know?
It's going to be a periodic thing. I'm not trying to, you know, spam
you
it too
you
much.
Don't
oversaturate
I appreciate
exactly.
it.
I'm mixing it in. I'm
if
mixing
we're just
it in.
Talking long term, I'm good with that.
I yeah. just love how you said it. I'll play you some country, Mike. Here's Luke Combs playing Tom Petty.
Tom Petty.
Covering Tom Petty. Let's do that.
Yeah,
hilarious.
It shows you my lack of country music knowledge. So, you know, there
it's
you
go. The flip with it, whatever Drake plays. I don't know what genre that is, but yeah, it's the
hip-hop.
Flip with me. Yeah, hip hop.
Well, he really makes global music. He makes all sorts
okay,
of music
because
he's the best artist in the world.
Sure.
But you know, I'll digress.
Sure. My name is Mike Johnson. Ali Mac sitting with us. Squid Billy, Bo Morgan, Dylon, obviously back there playing the music. It's time for the wake up call 404-726-0929. Got a couple callers on the line. Here's one of the questions that keeps popping up. And my timeline, Bo, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this because I want to hear from people today. Like I said, 404-726-0929. Questions, comments, concerns as far as Atlanta Falcons day one training camp. But the question that keeps popping up, and I think I know how you're going to feel about this question. Are you going to allow day one and the highlights and the videos and the comments talk you into believing in Kyle Pitts again this year? I think you were in lockstep with me last year going out to practice going, Kirk, big-time quarterback signing. You feel like you finally got that guy that's going to unlock Kyle Pitts. Big night out at second year high school last year. Just absolutely dominating out at training camp practices. And yet, ho-hum, once the season started. And I keep seeing comments and questions about whether or not you are going to get talked into believing in Kyle Pitts once again in 2025 in that fifth year. And whether or not this will be a season that can actually talk the Falcons into re-signing him to a long-term contract after his rookie contract is up.
I will believe in the players that have given me reason to believe in them time in and time out. And other than the first year of his career, I've not gotten much. I've got a game here, a game there. I mean, hell, I thought that last year in Tampa. Oh, man, this is it.
This is the one.
This is his moment where he refigures everything out and he just takes off. And then... Yeah, remember I came on here bragging. I was like, he's had like a 3-game stretch where he's had like 12 catches and 3 touchdowns and
he's
200 yards. And I'm like, he is unlocked. And then he had a stretch where he had like 2 catches in 4 games. So, no, he's got to show it. I'm going to put my faith and belief in the Drake Londons and Bijan Robinsons of the world because those guys, week in and week out, show up.
Yeah.
Sorry, they do.
Well, and here's the thing, too, and Mr. Yo obviously tweets this a lot, and I appreciate his commentary, and he kind of talked on what we were talking about. He says, I don't care about 11 or 12 personnel. Line up Charlie Warner next to Caleb McGarry and Darnell and Drake out wide, and you put Pitts in the slot and create mismatches. Use him like Jimmy Graham. Here's the problem, and you and I have talked extensively about this.
I've had word mismatch.
He's not a mismatch for anybody. He doesn't have the physicality that Jimmy Graham has. We just talked about the fact that Drake London is really the person who brings that physicality to the Atlanta Falcons offense. Now, look, man, I don't want to get this twisted. We're all rooting for Kyle Pitts. It's just you get to the point where you go, I believe it when I see it.
You tell me. I didn't play. I know what I know, but I don't know everything. Believe it or not, I mean, I don't. I mean, I know most things, but not everything.
Right.
Disclaimer there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Wouldn't you be doing yourself a better service to create mismatches if you put him outside and put Drake in the slot? Because of Drake. Because I don't think Kyle. When I think of Kyle Pitts, you know what I don't think of? Elite route runner.
Well,
I don't.
Well, and here's what I'll say about Drake to answer your question. You don't have to create mismatches for Drake. He is a mismatch. He's a mismatch.
Yeah.
You're going to line him up on a nickel? A nickel's not going to cover Drake in the slot. You know what I mean? A safety's not going to cover his route running ability. Now, he's not, again, you know who you create mismatches for? Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney is a guy that if you can find on a safety or a nickel or somebody who doesn't have top flight speed, if you can motion him across the formation and unleash his speed downfield, that's a mismatch. Because I know what Mr. Yo is thinking when he says mismatch, Kyle Pitts runs a 4-4. No, he doesn't, dude. Kyle Pitts right now does not run a 4-4. I'm sorry. That's just that is the honest fact of the situation. Ran a 4-4 at the combine. He doesn't run a 4-4 in 2025.
Okay, that's all erroneous because the only time that matters is if he's just running straight go routes, and yeah, the 4-4 matters.
Sure.
But he's not, or fade routes, but he's not. That's my point. Point is he's not an elite route runner. So unless you get him in like these drag routes and stuff, or you know, or you're running post routes and stuff,
yeah,
that speed doesn't freaking matter. Like it doesn't. It does. It does. He's got to be physical at the top of the route, like you said, and be able to run his routes very crisp.
Yeah.
He doesn't run crisp routes. He doesn't run elite routes.
Well, and here's what I will say, that yesterday he ran the wheel route, and there was a rub from the coverage on the wheel route up the sideline, which a lot of people saw as highlights. I think the Atlanta Falcons put it out. He's streaking up the sideline, gets hit, and then I think Xavier Watts or somebody had to save the touchdown down the field. That was a wheel route. And that's perfect. Allows him to open up his speed in the backfield. The coverage can't get press on him. You're not asking him to run a slant or run into coverage. And you can get a rub and get him open. And I think that's what they're probably going to be planning to do. Dylan, let's head out to the phone lines and let's talk to Meat, the ups man out in Forest Park. What's going on, Meat?
Yo, what's up?
Hey, man.
Rod Regis. Kill, 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 kill,
kill.
Hey, man, where is Rob Tribble? That is my wake-up call. Where is Rob?
If I had an answer for you, I'd let you know. I don't
it's
know.
It's been a very long time since I heard that raspy voice, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure Rob Tribble knows where Rob Tribble is, but that's neither here nor there.
I appreciate that question.
Lay off a cow piece, man. Lay off a cow, man.
Yeah,
it's gonna be all right, man.
I hope so. Well, I hope you're right.
I mean, I said that for 2 years, and then I stopped saying it.
Like I said, and that's the biggest takeaway is it's not like I don't want to sound like we're sour on Kyle Pitts. I'm not. I hope Lord knows. I hope that Kyle Pitts is. I hope he's great.
How about we just tell the truth?
Yeah.
Whatever you get from him is great. But you're not expecting much. Yeah.
Because you've been fooled in these situations, in these practices without pads on. You've been fooled.
Okay. Well, while everyone wants to make an excuse of who he didn't have throwing to him last year or who he did and how that's apparently the only player they don't know how to use well, he had 49 catches for like 500 yards last year.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I get that, great. I get it. It's icing on the cake. At the end of the day, I don't care what he gives me as long as we win. I'm just not hung. It's not where I'm putting my eggs anymore. It's not where I'm hanging all my hopes at. I told you, I'm putting hopes in Darnell and Drake and Bijan because I've seen those guys week in and week out put up numbers that helps this team win.
Yeah.
That's what I care about. My attention is actually on the other side of the ball right now. That's where I'm looking, and that's where I'm going to allow myself to get head over heels is going to be about Pierce and Jalen Walker and Billy freaking Bowman.
Yep.
Because those are the guys that I'm going to look at and either get excited or upset. You know, if I see good or bad, like that's where I'm at. The Kyle Pitts thing, it's a non-storyline for me, and it's great that everyone made it a one on day one. That's awesome. That's where you want to get
everyone. Well, and here's out. And everyone includes Michael Penix because he steps to the podium and is like, "Yeah, got KP the ball. That's gonna be a lot of that."
And look, that's what he needs to do though, and I'm happy that he did it.
Yeah,
I'm just not going in on that. I was like, I'm tired of getting upset. And excited over that player, I just am like because it feels when I'm critical it feels personal, and then when I get excited I feel like an idiot because then I come back 3 weeks and it's nothing like
right.
I just said. So I'm just done with that whole thing.
Yeah.
Whatever he does, he does. When he scores a touchdown in the radio booth, you see the cam. I'll do the gator chomp because that's a gator, and I appreciate it. We have a lot of former Gator quarterbacks on this team too. Emory Jones, Felipe Franks. But it's just like, he's not a storyline for me.
Yeah.
We got KP the ball today.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah. So he made it a storyline. So, all right, we got to go back to the phone line, 447-260-929. Hey, let's go over to Dan over in Decatur. Dan, what you got on your mind this morning, buddy?
What's happening, y'all? I ain't talked to y'all in a minute. I've been on vacation. I'm sorry, man.
Nice
but
to have you back.
So, really, man, with Kyle Pitts, bro, his nickname right now for me is Missouri. You got to show me, dog. You got to show me, bro. It's simple as that. He's like a dude that keep messing up and keep saying, "I'm sorry, baby, I'm sorry," and you keep doing the same thing, dog. You got to show me, brother. You got to show me. It's simple as that. Also, I'm just kind of curious about if you guys have seen anything from Kobe Bryant. You know, I heard a lot of, you know, about him coming out of coming out of Missouri. So yeah. I'm just wondering if you've heard anything about Kobe Bryant and what that's like.
Well, appreciate the phone call.
Kobe Bryant was actually put on the
he's from Kansas, by the way.
He was put on the non-football injury/illness list. So he's either sick or he got hurt doing something that wasn't football. Now, he was out there in a jersey.
It's probably a sickness, if I had to guess.
Something that was a little off, not feeling well. I think we should mention that they did put Troy Anderson on the PUP list. Before people freak out, lose their mind, kind of go, oh, here we go. Yeah, I think he's still recovering, and I think they're just probably taking him slow through the early days of camp and wanting to make sure that they can kind of ramp him up. The good thing is he can be activated during the preseason training camp era. He can be activated at any point from the PUP list. They don't have to wait a certain amount of time and all that stuff. So
here's the question I have in terms of Kobe Bryant, and this is what I keep trying to tell people. Now, there were one or two teams last year that maybe had like, I think the Rams had like four undrafted free agent rookies that made the team.
Mm-hmm.
That is an absolute outlier when it comes to NFL football. I would be willing to bet, and I have no idea what this stat is off the top of my head. I'd be willing to bet, like, on average, maybe across the NFL, you would say the average number is like 1.1 undrafted free agents per team that make a 53-man roster at the end of camp. Some teams won't have any. Matter of fact, I can't think of one the Atlanta Falcons had last year, an undrafted free agent that would have made the team. A rookie, anyways. An undrafted free agent rookie that made the team last year. I don't think they had any. So I keep hearing Nick Nash, Kobe Bryant. Like, you start going through the rotation and you have all the – like, the odds are, guys, that we're going to talk about maybe one of them. Maybe one. And Kobe Bryant, Nick Nash, they got the big – I know that Nick Nash was, conference, offensive player of the year, things like that, and won all these awards. The odds that both Kobe Bryant and Nick Nash and possibly somebody at a backup center spot or backup line spot all make the team is astronomically it doesn't seem mathematically possible. Maybe it happens. Like I said, there's outlier. I'm pretty sure the Rams had like four on their roster last year. Just doesn't happen every day.
Well,
it just doesn't.
Mike stood downer today, not me.
I keep getting questions about the UDFAs, and I want to just keep reminding people that don't overlook the guys that have been in there grinding for a number of years now. Those guys know the system, they know what the NFL's like, and they have a leg up when it comes to things like special teams, and so you'll probably see them get an opportunity.
Dylan, who are you playing right now?
Luke. I can't really hear
it's Luke Combs and Eric Church.
Yeah, Luke. Oh, yeah. Oh, so double down.
That's a good one. That's a good tune.
Like this one? I got you, Mike. I got you, brother.
I won't sing. I'll save y'all.
This hour is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. Coming up, I have a feeling we might see a few headlines come out about the Braves as we get closer to that trade deadline. We got to talk to our Braves insider, Grant McCauley, about that. He is coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
The Odyssey app.
Now he's just sucking up.
He's pandering. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are The Morning Shift. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson and Bo Morgan. And we're about to welcome in Sports Radio 92.9 The Game's very own Braves insider and reporter and host of From the Diamond, Grant McCauley. And our conversation with Grant is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service, and by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today. Grant, welcome in. I feel like this is probably going to be the longest conversation we have for the next 3 days. So thanks for joining us for a few moments today on The Morning Shift.
Well, there you have it. The longest conversation we have, and it's got sponsors. That's incredible.
Yeah, there you go. Congratulations to y'all for that. Grant, I don't know if you've put on a blonde wig with bangs anytime during y'all's marriage, but I know that Nick Carter is at the front center.
That is very strange. That's a very strange comment, Mike.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Grant, speaking of blonde hair, what's your favorite Hollywood Hulk Hogan memory? I mean, because we got to get away from this weird thing they're talking about.
Yeah, there's something going on there. I'm not sure quite what it is. I'm sure I'll figure it out when at least one party of the show comes back to the house. But
yeah, yesterday, an hour.
Yeah, I know. Kind of a weird day yesterday, though. I think that there's no denying the impact that Hulk Hogan had on the pro wrestling business and American pop culture. He might have been maybe the most recognizable person in the world for a couple of years there in the 1980s. It's been a little more complicated lately, but I choose to kind of look at him for what he did inside those ropes. And I do think my favorite memory would be the formation of the NWO. Those were kind of my biggest moments getting into wrestling and enjoying it, and I still do. But it's hard to replicate those, I guess, those great heights that it reached in the 1990s and early 2000s. So I think we can just keep chasing it. But he was at the center of it, and it's incredible because at one point, as they were taking off, it was, this guy's too old to make an impact anymore. Just forget about him. We'll give you some new stars. And he managed to reinvent himself and get a whole nother run out of it, and that's pretty impressive, I would say.
Which one was your favorite version of Hulk Hogan? Was it the Hulkamania or was it the Hollywood?
Hollywood.
Really? You were a Hollywood.
Like, he might be one of the greatest heels of all time.
I mean, I agree, but I just figured Grant just, I mean.
It's the beard.
Is that what it
Look,
is?
Look, I mean, Allie can tell you, that there is a good portion of my wardrobe that is black and white and has that NWO logo on it.
I personally have 3-4 NWO hoodies that I did not purchase.
You, what?
I did not purchase them. They were purchased for me.
Couple goals. Couple goals.
Grant was not the Wolfpack NWO. He was definitely the OG black and white.
Oh, man.
Yeah, or the NWO Elite. Then that's when things really went wrong.
Well, we're going to pivot a little bit. Before we get to the current Braves team, Jesse Chavez retired yesterday. We're sad to see him go. But you tweeted, Grant, about how any team would be lucky to have him as a coach. Any guesses on a timeline or what that could look like?
Yeah, I think it could happen sooner than later from the way Jesse was talking yesterday. And for anybody who missed it, he was on Foul Territory TV with Scott Braun and the crew. And just, I think that one of the things that's made Jesse so special is the fact that, I mean, his perseverance and his dedication to this game, I mean, you can't fake that. And his ability to get the most out of what he was capable of doing, which was taking the ball and throwing strikes. I mean, I talked to Charlie Morton about this last year for about 20 minutes, and he said, there are a lot of organizations today, like if Jesse Chavez was a college player today, he might never get this career. So it's really special to see what he's able to do with what he throws and with his arsenal, as opposed to, hey, I throw 97 miles an hour with a 3,000 RPM breaking ball. When are you going to call me up? Well, probably next year. For Jesse, he, I think, timed it really well. He certainly traveled, put a lot of miles in there. So he has a wealth of experience and knowledge, and that's the kind of thing that I think any club, any pitching staff in particular, would be lucky to have. And Jesse's already gotten the nickname coach the last couple of years anyway. So I think he's ready for it. I think that he still has more he wants to do in the game from the sound of it, and that he and his family the last couple of years, as they would talk about, you know, the opportunity to continue his career, it started to just transition into, yeah, maybe this coaching thing is that next step, that next evolution for him, because he says, if it's possible for me to give everything that I have to somebody so they don't have to take a couple of steps back and can keep moving their career forward, that's what I want to do. And I think that's commendable, and that's exactly the kind of attitude that you need from a coach and somebody that can give to those players to help them elevate their game.
Well, we'll be looking forward to seeing that. And like you said, maybe even sooner than later, what the next step is for him. I'm curious the next step for the Braves, Grant. And I think that you are, along with a lot of other Braves fans out there, kind of struggled. It's like, obviously you want them to win, but you also want to see signs of life from some of these players. You want to be forward facing, at least in a couple of different facets for this franchise. And I'm curious what Grant McCauley's looking at over the next couple of weeks in terms of what you want to see happen and what you'll be looking for actually happening on the field as well.
Well, you'd like to see some progress on the field. I think that's the number one thing. I mean, this has been a club that's hard to figure out. I mean, once or twice a week, they score 7 or 8 or 9 runs, and you think, oh, wait, maybe they're starting to figure it out. Then the next day, they score a bunch of runs, but the pitching staff blows it. And then for a couple of days, the offense goes lights out completely, and they are unable to win a series. And that's exactly how this homestand just went. Very high in the early going of the series against the Yankees and the Giants, and then unable to win the next couple of games. And that has kind of been their MO this season. They've been bad in rubber matches and third games of series in general. They've been really bad on Sundays, I can tell you, because I do a show after a lot of those losses, and they've lost 9 of those in a row.
This is awful.
It's difficult to have any other conversation other than this club hasn't met its expectations. It certainly hasn't met the fans' expectations, or really all of baseball's expectations for what their season could be. I think you just want to see, A, guys get healthy. That would be a big thing. I know there's been some conversation about, do you bring the pitchers back if they're not playing for anything? I kind of think you do, because I think it's important to finish your rehab and close the season healthy if possible. Maybe they're not going to throw a ton of innings, and I don't know. Chris Sale, I think, is due back with a little bit more of a clear timeline than Spencer Schwellenbach is, but I still think that the possibility of them pitching this year, the door shouldn't be closing on that. But you got to see more from the offense. Michael Harris obviously has a big couple of months ahead of him. He closed last year pretty strong. Can he do it again this year in what's been a very challenging season for him? And as we know, we're a week away, less than now, from the trade deadline. Are we seeing the last hurrah for Marcell Ozuna and Raisel Iglesias, among others, in a Braves uniform? That we'll find out sooner than later. And then where does the club pivot? Where do they go? What do they look for in order to, you know, change out those pieces and reload over the course of the offseason? So those are some of the things I'm looking for in terms of the overall dynamic of the team. I think that the Braves have been extremely, extremely tested, probably to their limits and beyond what they expected this year. So being able to maybe pull the nose up on this thing at the end and at least finish better than you started would be something to go into the offseason, because I don't think this is a club that's spiraling and going into the rebuild direction, but they need to reconfigure and get themselves back on track to do the winning that they expect to be doing every year.
I told Allie some questions I had, but for you before, and you've touched on like literally a couple of them, and now I don't know which one to ask, but I want to ask this question, which is going to be weird and it's going to throw a lot of people off. I understand that they could sell some guys, like you said, Ozuna and Iglesias. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if there's anybody else there. You can touch on that if you want. But is there any chance that this team could actually also be a buyer, and hear me out, for a player that basically start their free agency now, like a Sandy Alcantara or someone like that who has a couple years left. You know the team that he's on won't re-sign him because it's just not what they do. And maybe the Braves could slide in there and grab that guy, maybe really just looking forward to next year.
Yeah, they could do that. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out completely. I don't necessarily expect that as much, because there will be a lot of competition, and I think that it will be a seller's market at the trade deadline as well. The teams that do decide to trade away their pieces, they're going to be able to ask a lot for them. The Braves being in that fray, trying to one-up offers from other clubs, that's kind of part of the math. Whereas I feel like a lot of this, what the Braves are trying to accomplish really speaks more to me to work over the winter. So could they do it? Yes. Do I expect them to do it? What are the optics overall of them maybe spending prospect capital right now when they could fill a need perhaps a little bit later by, and I know this may not sound like a thing the Braves will do, but maybe spend some money since they reset the luxury tax this year and look into the offseason as a lot of different ways to accomplish the various needs that they're going to have, particularly on the pitching side of things. So I wouldn't rule it out completely, but I just don't expect that to be the direction they're going to go. But I've been surprised before, and Alex Anthopoulos has shown in the past he can get creative when given the opportunity to, you know, go out and find something that his club could use, and he likes controllable players, so maybe that is something that makes sense.
It certainly is going to be interesting to see what happens. What are you working on for From the Diamond this weekend, Grant?
Well, the big weekend of Hall of Fame induction is upon us, so I'm looking to do a lot of fun coverage on that. I'm looking forward to everything I can get from a lot of media sessions that should be happening here soon. And, of course, we'll talk about the Braves. We'll lead up to the trade deadline, which is going to start heating up across Major League Baseball. Who knows? Between now and Sunday, maybe we'll have a couple of more deals. The Mariners jumped the market yesterday, getting a first baseman from the Diamondbacks and Josh Naylor. That is probably just the first of many dominoes that could be falling over the next 5 or 6 days. But that and more, and all the Braves talk you can possibly stomach this time of year, is happening from the Diamond 5 to 7 on Sundays here on 92.9 The Game, wherever you get your podcast and on the Odyssey app.
Any chance you talk, Grant, about Michael Harris kind of changing his swing up a little bit?
Yeah, no, that's going to come. I came up this past week as well, so hopefully I get to talk about the results that come from those changes, because I can tell you this, Michael Harris has not just been showing up at the ballpark and just hoping that talent's going to win out. There's been a lot of work and a lot of adjustments he's been trying to make. It is not an easy thing to do in season, and particularly, as we've talked about a lot, when it's decision-based stuff that you're trying to change, habits and reactions. I mean, that's not an easy thing for an athlete in any sport to change and have it turn on a dime. So he's going to try to make the most out of this week and every week ahead of him in advance of the offseason, so he can maybe go in there feeling a little bit better about what 2025 was, even if it will kind of be ultimately a bit of a lost season.
Hard work giving away Ford Broncos.
Yeah, no, it is. And back-to-back years. I don't know if you can afford to do that.
Hopefully you can quit playing games with my heart.
Exactly. Which WrestleMania are you going to reminisce with while I'm in Vegas this weekend?
Well, WrestleMania 18, Hogan versus Rock.
Knew it!
Awesome. Well, you enjoy that, Grant. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. You're larger than life.
Oh, I'm getting so excited. That's Grant McCauley, 92.9 The Game's Braves insider and host of From the Diamond. Coming up, we're going to go back to Falcons training camp. So much coming out of yesterday. I feel like we haven't unpacked 30% of it. Like, I mean, we've gotten a little bit, just a teeny tiny bit. So we're going to get back into that. And we've got a Life of Squid on the way.
I'm calling BS on one college football player who's changing his tune about how his offseason played out. Next, Morning Shift, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and
The Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are the Morning Shift with Mike, Bo. I'm Allie Mack, and Dylan is behind the glass, not playing country right now at 8:41. This hour has been brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com, get a guaranteed offer on your home today, and start packing. We've been talking about Atlanta Falcons training camp. Kicked off yesterday. We were live out there. Everybody was live out there from 92.9 The Game. And our takeaways from the day. Was there really anything from yesterday that we haven't gotten to broach that you saw?
I think we've talked about things very broadly today. And you know, we got a chance to really dive in a little bit to the nuts and bolts surrounding Billy Bowman being, you know, on certain fields and Kyle Pitts, personnel-wise, where he's lining up at, what the expectations are for him, what his limitations are at this point, the fact that Troy Anderson, you know, obviously not part of what's going on out there. But I just think overall, just trying to take in the 30,000 foot view, the energy was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things you look at. You always kind of have that vibe on day one, but it's year two under Raheem. It's the, you know, it's a lot of the same staff. It just seemed like guys were bouncing around and really brought a really good energy to all the 11 on 11 stuff. It wasn't like goofy energy. Like I saw a video of Dak Prescott riding a broomstick. You know, through one of the drills going over a bat. I don't know if you guys saw, it was weird.
No, I did not see that.
And I was like, okay, that's just strange. I'm sure people just love seeing that. It wasn't like weird energy. It wasn't like dancing energy, but it was like everybody moving around with a good pace and very almost businesslike. And I think that's important to kind of keep in mind because we've talked about Cowboys training camp and Bengals training camp and talking about all these things that aren't related to the on-field product. And the Falcons very much seem like they are focused on one thing, and that's winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to see it.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs lost his dog. Did you see that?
I did see that.
I didn't see that.
He brought his dog to training camp, and he's like in pads and everything. He got his helmet in one hand. He's like chasing his dog around a fence and then like grabs it.
Is girlfriend bring the dog out to watch or something?
I think he brought the dog to training camp.
How do you bring a dog?
Isn't his girlfriend that rapper chick?
Cardi B, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing. It was adoption day. And so it was an adoptable dog that he was kind of showcasing.
Oh,
and it got away from him.
That's not what the tweet and the video
you
I saw said.
You can't believe Twitter.
You know what? Can I sound off a second? I'm going to make a statement and then I'm not going back. Manny, who's him and I tweet all the time. He's my boy, all right, in all fairness. But he wants to argue a lot. Bro, y'all act like KP is old and lost a step. He's 24, not lost anything physically. I promise you he will have 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns as a contract year. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't give a damn. I'm not talking about what he is supposed to be or how old he is anymore. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't care that he's 24, and I don't care they ran a 4.4. All I care about is he's physical in the top of routes and right and off the, and if he's lined up at the line and he runs crisp routes and he gives everything. I am done talking about what he can be. What he is what I've seen. I'm done of talking about it. It's not his fault. It's a mismatch. It's quarterbacks. Everybody else can get it done out there. Why can't he? I'm done talking about hypotheticals with that player. All I will talk about from now on is what he has done or what he does in games. That's it.
I just don't know where the evidence lies for that statement. I hope he's right. I hope he's right, man. I But I do think he's lost a step. Hey, man, you know, hey, wasn't 100% coming off the knee a couple of years ago. Okay, cool. And look, most players in year five are not what they were in year one. Physically, it's just, it is what it is. You've been through five rigorous seasons. You've had a major knee surgery. I don't think it's stepping out of line to say he's not a 4.4 runner anymore. 4.6 is still, you think Travis Kelce runs a 4.6? No. You know what I mean? Like, so you can still be that guy.
You know what Travis Kelce does?
Gets open.
Runs crisp routes. Yeah,
he's good route runner. Top of the route, yeah.
I mean, don't you just get exhausted, though, with it?
Yeah, and I don't want to focus
on
other
things. I'm exhausted with it.
I want to focus on other parts of this team.
Half the people hate him. The other half want to make excuses. I'm just over it. I don't dislike him. I just want to see us win. All I care about is making the playoffs. I haven't had a playoff game in 7 years, man.
Well, and from the energy Mike was just talking about yesterday, that is possible. And like we've been saying all morning, what they want to do is win. They want to be a playoff team. So we'll see what happens. I definitely learned a lesson yesterday, though, is when the sideline players start backing up, you get out of the way, too.
Yeah, I was from the hill watching this, and I was like, how's this going to go for Allie?
Yeah, it's so funny. I was watching a throwing drill with DJ Shockley, and TJ Yates kind of jogs over, and he kind of looks at us like, y'all might want to watch out. If they overthrow me in this throwing drill, they're going to hit y'all square in the face.
Yeah. Careful. It was very close. And I just looked over at Mike. I was like, this is so cool. But Raheem Morris, one of the things he talked about yesterday is that he is excited for position battles on defense.
You know, there's a bunch. You know, they're all over the place, particularly on defense. You know, we got some really good battles over there. You know, well documented. You know, offense, we're probably a little bit more established on who's going to be doing what and who's playing where. You know, obviously, we have a brand new center out there at a full-time basis, even though he started a bunch of games for us. We got to find ways to get Tyler on the field. We got to find ways to get Bijan on the field. So all of those things, all of those kind of chessmates on offense are kind of always fun. On defense, we got some real battles. You know, we got new linebackers. We got some people in the new in the secondary. We got people new up front. We got some second-year players that are getting chance to get some exciting things to happen. When you talk about Dolis and Rook and the Trice coming back, you got your new rookies coming in, talking about Jalen Walker, you got Pierce, you know, who's playing what role, who's doing what, and expecting high contributions from those really 2 years of young classes, right? Last year, it was well documented, we had an older veteran team on defense that we played with those guys, and now that crew from last year, you know, we call them sophomores, but really, you know, freshmen, so to speak, man, those guys are ready to go. We got a big, deep class there.
I thought Rook sounded vocal yesterday. I heard Rook talking multiple times, and it wasn't like a trash talk, and it's not necessarily even talking to offensive players, but talking after a play and kind of hyping players up. It's clear to me that he's obviously taking a more visible role as a starter on this team. You know, after a pass breakup, a PBU down the field, he kind of jogging downfield, dapping up like the safety or corner, whoever made it happen. So I love seeing those guys fly around. When we hear clips from Raheem, I think 80% of it is kind of throwaway comments, and there's like 20% of it where you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like he says, hey, we got to find, you know, ways to get Bijan on the field. No, you don't. He's just starting running back. Just put him on the field, and you just run plays to him. Like, you know, have to find ways to get Bijan on the field. But when you start hearing him name Dorless, Trice, things like that, I think that's where it becomes interesting.
I think, and Arch and I were sitting there watching, and they had Dorless on the edge. And what, you know, you talked about earlier, they really lined up the front was lined up in a 3-4 type alignment, and they had Dorless on the edge, and me and Arch were talking, and he was like, I think people forget that guy came off the edge at times at Oregon, and he was pretty good. And I said, well, the thing for me, though, is, you know, and I've talked to some guys in the building, they said that the plan was kind of a redshirt year for Dorless. But I told Arch, I said, the problem is that's not how fans think. That's how we think. We see a guy drafted and we get excited. And then we see a guy inactive 14 out of 17 weeks. And in our mind, because we're not there and no one's saying, look, this is our plan publicly, we think that guy sucks or that guy fall out of favor or he's not what they thought or he's not good enough or he's injured. We don't think we wanted him to do that because we felt like that was our best shot, and we had this thought, like, we don't think like that because, you know, why? It's not our job.
Yeah.
Transparency is good sometimes in that aspect where they can tell you, but teams don't want to be transparent because NFL teams are always hiding stuff. It feels like they have this secret plan.
Well, and I think a lot of it, too, becomes revisionist, if I'm being completely transparent, because If Brandon Dorrance is out in the field last year just absolutely wrecking people, you're probably going to find a way to make him part of your defense, right? I think you can go in.
No, I do agree with that.
I think you can go in with the plan of, hey, we're going to redshirt this guy. You know, we'll give him a year. And truth be told, in the NFL, as fans, we look at it that way because a lot of times head coaches don't have a long enough leash to be able to plan ahead like that.
It's like, dude,
if this guy didn't happen now, you're done.
No, you're right. I actually think Rook was on the same plan, and I think Rook forced his way on the field.
I tend to agree with that, actually. And obviously through other things that happened, but necessity being one of them because you were so bad up front last year. But I think that he is going to be well suited for what Ulbrich's asking him to do right now.
I do too. It kind of similar to what he was asked to do in college. Yeah, I'm definitely going to fry the egg up. The one thing I don't put Baron Burton's baby sauce on is salmon. And I got a big slab from Sam's the other day. But I think I'm going to fire up some chicken, too, because Amy doesn't eat the salmon. So I'll probably make her some chicken.
Dude,
Lindsay's
the same way.
I do put Baron Burton's on there, the W sauce.
Lindsay's the same way. She's from freaking Florida and won't eat fish. It drives me nuts.
That is a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's strange.
That is a little bit weird. Nico Iamalalialu.
I was like, I'm not rescuing you.
I had it sounded out in the break. And you know what's funny is when I hear his name said, I'm like, yeah, that's how you say it. And then I go to say, I'm
sounds
like,
right.
Iamalava, Iamalalialu. What? Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Nico, everybody knows him. Tennessee quarterback who left to go to UCLA. All that stuff was about money, right? Now, there's been reports that it came out that he told, that his family told, his dad told the program, hey, you better put better players around him or else.
Right.
But now he spoke, and he says, it's one of the hardest decisions I ever had to make. My driving factor to come back home was my family. And I hope every Tennessee fan understands that. It was just a lot of drama, but man, I'm excited to be at UCLA. He said all this at Big Ten Media Days. So basically, he's saying that it wasn't about money. I just think the outside world in general thinks that it's something that it wasn't. Going back home was always in the back of my head, just being closer to my family. Took a toll on me getting my family to Tennessee. It was just a lot of traveling. Because that part makes sense. But dude, this thing was publicly about freaking money. And there is no way to rein it back. And if you thought you were being misrepresented, why didn't you say so?
I don't know. See, I kind of tend to agree with them. I don't know that it was about money. I think it was about not money for him, at least. I think it was about money for playing other players to come in and be better players off the transfer portal and everything else.
Then why did his brother, who was at another school in the SEC, who had gotten paid, suddenly leave too? After he already got paid. So he went somewhere to get, why would he even leave? Why would he go to that school? You remember that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm just not sure the argument you're trying to make.
Why take money and then just turn around and leave? Why, if you knew what your brother was going through, which was Nico, then why would you go somewhere instead of just staying straight up and just going straight to UCLA to begin with?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. And I think my biggest takeaway from this entire thing, and I saw some of the stuff put out about him saying, it's about family, and the news breaking that multiple people have said from within the program that his dad was threatening to leave if they didn't get better players around him. I find that comical. And I, by no means am I a Tennessee fan. I think that Josh Heupel's a great coach. But I find it comical for a dad of a quarterback to be like, got to find good players around him. Mm-hmm. What do you think I'm trying to do? For the love, what do you think my job has been for the last 4 years? You think I'm trying to find mediocre players? Do you think that I'm trying to be average?
I'm gonna tell you something. I understand what you're saying, and I acknowledge it. But after what Jaden Rashada's dad pulled with not only Florida but Miami and the multiple schools, what Dylan Raiola pulled here at Georgia, I can't give the benefit of the doubt anymore on the ridiculous things that are said to coaches by dads and agents.
I fully
and
believe
everything.
He said that. I believe his dad was like, "Hey, you got to find better players around my son." But it's just comical to me because it's like, what do you think I'm trying to do?
Maybe that's when the breaking point for Heupel was. It was like, you know what? Just leave. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't
like,
care.
Like, what do you think I'm trying to do? Dude, my job is on the line. Yeah. Like, you think I'm worried about your kid?
Right.
Like, my job's on the line. Oh, you know what? Because your dad said it, I'm going to go recruit better players.
If I'm Heupel, I would have said, well, tell your son to show up in a playoff game.
Oh, tell your son to take a pay cut. How about that? So I can pay some of these other kids.
You know, yeah, your son's great against non-Power 5 schools or Power 4 schools. And then everybody, you know, he's awful against power fours, and then non-power four. He's a superstar. Maybe he should go there, get more money and better players around him.
Yeah, he played well against Bama, so I'm not going to say anything.
That is going to do it for us. For Mike, Bo, Dylan, and myself, Allie Mack, thanks for being here today. Have a wonderful weekend. The Steakhouse is coming up next with Rusty Manziel and Abe Gordon filling in for Steak. That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And don't forget to...
Y'all stay cool.